Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Today's podcast is a podcast I've been looking forward to ever since we put it in the diary some months ago. And we're going to be discussing UK equities and UK income portfolios. And to do that, we're kindly joined by Chris McVeigh, who is the lead fund manager at Octopus Investments. Chris, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan. Much appreciated.
So as I said, we're going to be discussing your portfolio. But before we do that, Chris, would you be able to give us a bit of background to Octopus Investments, your team, and a little bit about yourself as well, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. For those that don't know Octopus itself, you probably have seen Octopus Energy billboards around increasingly. Talked about given what's happening in the energy sector. But Octopus itself has got two distinct elements to it, one of which is the energy business and one of which is Octopus Investments, the financial services business, which actually came first. It was founded in 2000. It now manages about £11 billion in assets across a variety of sectors and strategies and public-private markets, etc. We as a team, we are the quoted companies team at Octopus. There's nine investment professionals within that team. We run about £2.9 billion within quoted UK equities. Mm-hmm. The average tenure across the team is about 12 years. So it's a very established platform. Richard Power, who runs the team and is co-manager on this fund with me, has been at Octopus for almost 17 years, I think. I'm the new boy on the team. I've only been here for 6 years. So it's a very established, very stable platform, and it's a relatively scale platform. And therefore, this fund benefits from that knowledge, that expertise. As I say, I came across to Octopus in 2016. Prior to that, I was at Citigroup. For 7 years, latterly as one of the lead equity analysts on the UK small mid-cap product. And then prior to that, for about 7 years, I was at an investment house called Gartmore, which is sadly no longer in existence.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Chris, now could we have a look at the fund and the portfolio from, you know, quite a top level? Sort of looking at, you know, the key characteristics and how has it performed since it launched in 2018?
The catchily named FP Octopus UK Multicap Income Fund, Jonathan, was launched in December 18. It is the best performing fund in the IA UK equity income sector since launch, and over 2 years. It's a genuine multi-cap income fund. It's blending companies from across the entire UK equity market. It's looking to build a portfolio, an income portfolio, focused on faster growth, income generating businesses that are therefore capable of growing earnings ahead of the market and therefore paying a progressive and growing dividend, which will also grow ahead of the market. We see it as a true diversifier to some of the more traditional UK equity income funds. We can come on and talk about why we decided to do that maybe later on. But we're utilising the team's core satellite approach. Again, I'll give you some more colour on that in a second. But it's that ability to take advantage of these compelling opportunities, more focused on the sort of small mid-cap space than perhaps many of the traditional income funds are, that enables us to hopefully benefit from that faster growth in both earnings and ultimately dividends.
Indeed. I mean, the multi-cap element is something that's very interesting. As you said, we'll delve into that in more detail a little bit later on. But why did you take this approach to UK equity income when you launched a fund? As you said, very different to some of the other funds out there.
Yeah. So the rationale behind the fund launch in 18 was, as I say, looking at that large platform that we have within Octopus. Many of the assets that we manage on the team are our inheritance tax products. That's what we're best known for, tax efficient products. Those clients obviously would, we think, would have liked an income product. So we thought we'd develop one. But we looked across the UK equity income space at the time, and there were three key issues that we identified that meant we took a slightly different route. Concentration, cover, and growth are the three key challenges. I've touched on each of these separately. Concentration. Many investors are diversifying, in inverted commas, their equity income exposure by buying a number of equity income funds. If you look down, I think it's 80 plus 85 equity income products out there. The vast majority of them are doing very similar things in our view. They're concentrating their holdings around the very large traditional equity income names. We all know the stories of concentration within UK UK dividends. Half the UK dividends originate from just 10 FTSE 100 companies, your Rios, your BHPs, your BPs, etc. So ultimately, many of these clients who are holding a range of funds are actually ultimately holding many of the same stocks within those portfolios. So there's massive correlation there, obviously, within many of the funds out there. So concentration on a relatively narrow number of stocks. If you look at the correlation, we did a bit of work on that as well. And if you look at the top 10 positions within the UK equity income space, you can see Glaxo's in 60% of people's top 10s, BP's in 45%, Astra's in 45%. 45% of funds have Astra BP as a top 10 position. You know, there's massive correlation there. So that's one aspect. The other aspects were the dividend cover and the lack of growth. Dividend cover, we had been seeing that decline over the last decade. Whilst you've been seeing good dividend growth in many of the UK dividend payers, you have been seeing dividend cover decline as many of these companies hadn't been able to keep pace with their dividend payouts from the underlying earnings growth within these businesses. You saw dividend cover get down to about 1.5 times towards the back end of the last decade. We think 2 times is a sustainable number. And indeed, our portfolio pre-crisis was running at 2.4 times. It's currently well in excess of that. We can talk about that again maybe in a second. But the large dividend paying companies in the UK were, in our view, many of them were over distributing. So we always knew there would have to be either a slowing of dividend growth or perhaps a reset. And obviously, the pandemic came along and was that reset. What we see now is dividend cover within UK at about 2 times, which is good, but it's not at a level meaning that the companies can reinstate their dividends back up to the pre-crisis level. So the companies themselves, the large cap stocks that people hold, yes, they'll see dividend growth, but we won't see dividend recovery back to where we were before, because they haven't got the dividend cover that's comfortable from that perspective. The other aspect was growth. We've done quite a lot of work on this. And if you look at the FTSE all-share average, looking through the crisis, this is four-year data to the end of 22, you can see the average FTSE all-share growth in earnings is expected to be low single-digit percent on a CAGR basis. And indeed, with the dividend reset, the negative, I think there'll still be about 15% below pre-crisis levels by 2022. You'll see a negative CAGR in dividend growth. By taking a focus on progressive, faster growth, income-generating businesses, our portfolio itself is generating, or is expected to generate on consensus numbers, earnings growth of about 10% and dividend growth of about 10% through the same period. So it's by focusing on these faster growing businesses that you can diversify your exposure, and you can tilt your portfolio towards these progressive, faster growing businesses, and therefore clients should benefit from outperformance through the cycle.
Thank you. So that's a good outline of the overall strategy and the types of companies that you seek out. But when you're actually building the portfolio, Chris, what's your strategy there in terms of the construction of the portfolio?
Jonathan, the portfolio utilizes, it's a team approach that we use across the other UCITS funds that we run. It's called a core satellite strategy. It's entirely bottom up. What this means is the core of the portfolio is made up of companies which we believe can grow earnings and can grow dividends ahead of the market, and will ultimately be substantially larger enterprises over our core 3 to 5 year investment horizon. The core of the portfolio is about 70% of the assets within the fund, and it's made up of companies that, you know, benefit from characteristics such as robust finances, appropriate balance sheets, superior prospects for growth, good levels of earnings visibility, and management teams that we believe can deliver on that strategy. Many of the names are names that we have across other mandates on the team. We are big shareholders as a team in some of the names here: Watkin Jones, Emis, Renew, Strix. But it's finding, you know, these fantastic growth opportunities, which are paying a dividend as well. That's key. Every single stock in the portfolio has to be on a dividend journey. Some of them are smaller dividend payers right now, and we'll talk about that in a second, but they all have to be on that journey. The core of the portfolio very much is high quality, dividend paying, growing companies. The portfolio also operates with two groups of satellites. One group is offering lower growth characteristics in the short term, but superior sustainable dividends. And the other group of satellites is likely to be paying a lower near-term dividend, but offers a portfolio really exceptional growth opportunities with the scope to grow dividends over time. So on the dividend satellites, names such as Paypoint, the Yellow Terminals and Corner Shops, for instance, that's a business which is it's obviously having to grapple with declines in use of cash and, you know, some challenges over some of its newer businesses with regards to COVID. So the parcel collection business obviously hasn't been quite as successful as they thought it would be, because people are all at home, working from home. So you need to go to your corner shop to collect. But that ultimately, we think, could be a good growth platform in due course. Right now, it's paying the fund a better market dividend. At the other end, we get lower dividend paying names such as Future, which I'm sure many of your listeners will be familiar with. That's been a great capital performer for the portfolio. It's a relatively low dividend payer at this stage, but it's got great cash generative characteristics. It's using that cash generation to consolidate the industry. At some point, perhaps in future, the consolidation story may run its course, and this may become a much larger dividend payer, at which point this could become a core holding. But right now, it's been a capital performer for the fund, a capital satellite, and that's what's been boosting the capital performance for the overall fund.
So, Chris, I just want to pick up there on the bottom-up approach that you have to the portfolio. I mean, when you're going out and looking for companies, do you have in mind a particular company that you want to be allocating to the core of the portfolio or as a satellite? Or throughout that process, do you then find, well, this company would suit going into a satellite, and that's something that you go about actually allocating throughout the process of looking at companies, or do you go out and actually look for particular companies to put in the different parts of the portfolio? And through doing that, are there any key sectors that you're finding are finding their way into the portfolio?
It's a very long question, Jonathan. the team itself, we're a big team. We do a lot of meetings. We do on average about 800 a year, face-to-face management meetings. During the COVID year, we were over 1,000, not face-to-face, obviously, in many cases, but Zoom-to-Zoom.
Yeah.
But we are a big team. We can therefore turn over a lot of stones that perhaps people have ignored, or stories that perhaps have changed, that are, you know, other houses which are much more limited in the size of the personnel who are focused on this end of the market perhaps can't do. So we do a lot of meetings. We have an extensive broker network, obviously, who suggest things to us. We do screening. We've got an internal screen, a quant screen called Edge. We also use other screens such as Quest, etc., to help identify opportunities that have the characteristics we're looking for: a dividend, a growing dividend, earnings growth and attractive valuation, good finances, all these things. And ultimately, we'll go into a meeting. And yes, some meetings will be more obviously candidates for a satellite, whether it's growth or income. But it's ultimately understanding the opportunity that this business presents over that 3 to 5 year time horizon that we're focused on before we decide to allocate it to, well, first of all, buy it at all for the fund and allocate it to one of those three buckets, as it were. As I say, it's a bottom up approach, so it isn't focused on any particular sectors. We don't have any strong desire to be overweight any particular sectors. The fund is very much sector agnostic. Right now, the fund has relatively large weightings in financials, media, construction, support services. As I said, we're looking to construct a core portfolio that we believe can grow earnings and dividends ahead of the market through the cycle. And right now, we're finding the best opportunities within these sectors, hence our positioning.
So that's a good overview of the fund there. Thank you very much, Chris. I mean, people will be, you know, looking at this and listening to this and looking at your fund and making comparisons to other UK equity income funds. I mean, what would you say makes you different from some of the other options out there?
Yeah, we've touched on some of the issues that some of the bigger, more traditional income funds have suffered from. I mean, the case for UK equity income, it's well understood, offering scope, investor scope for sustainable and growing dividends with the potential for capital growth. However, as we've touched on, there's enormous concentration in UK equity income funds, many holding the same big, relatively low growth FTSE 100 dividend pairs, your Rios, your Shells, your BP, etc. We take a completely different approach to portfolio construction. By taking this multi-cap approach, we can select stocks from across the entire listed UK equity market, but with a focus on those progressive, faster growth, small and mid-cap companies, where we have got experience in the area. As I say, as a team, we manage almost 3 billion within these UK small and mid-cap equities. It's that focus, it's that different approach, it's that wider approach, it's that multi-cap approach which sets us apart. There are very few multi-cap funds within the UK equity income space. It's an approach I think others should be looking at as well. I don't think people should be so set upon just those large, as they say, relatively low growth dividend payers, because ultimately, longer term, it's been proven that small and mid-cap companies grow more quickly than larger peers, and this fund will benefit
indeed
from that.
So, I mean, let's just drill down into that now, Chris. What does the split look like in your portfolio between large, medium, and small-sized equities? How have you gone about allocating across those three categories in the portfolio?
About 15% of the portfolio is in companies with a market cap in excess of 3 billion. Another 10% is in companies between 1 and 3 billion. So we're not averse to them. We do have some interesting larger opportunities. B&M, for example, being one of them, one of our core holdings. It's where we see interesting growth opportunities that we're happy to buy them, or where we think it's an interesting angle, we're happy to buy them. The vast majority of assets within the portfolio are within companies with a market cap of between 100 million and a billion. That's a sweet spot for this fund. That's where our expertise and our experience lies as a team. And it is a team process here. It's not just me on my own. It's very much leveraging that larger platform. And we have about 5% of the portfolio in companies below 100 million market cap. It's relatively small. I suggest that will probably decline further as the fund grows. The fund's AUM is roughly about 80 million right now. We'd hope we can scale that to be substantially larger over time, and that 5% will decline. But we still think we have got the opportunity, and first of all, and secondly, the liquidity that is key within those companies between 100 and a billion. And I say we run, you know, almost 3 billion within the space already. We know how to manage liquidity. It's something we've been doing for a long time. It's not a reaction to any issues that perhaps have plagued the space over the last couple of years. It's something we do as a team, and we do well, I think. And it's understanding that, which I think again is an element that this big team, this process that we can leverage brings again to this fund.
I mean, for me, that's particularly fascinating, having a large proportion of your portfolio in that space between 100 million and a billion, because, of course, whilst they're paying dividends, there is a significant opportunity for growth, one would think, in those portfolios, which just isn't evident in some more traditional funds that focus on the larger caps. So let's now, Chris, look at some of the top holdings, top 10 holdings in the funds. You did mention a couple of companies previously, but let's look at some specific names now. Are there any there that you're particularly excited about at the moment?
I mean, Jonathan, if you look across the top 10 positions, I'm excited by all of them. I think the top 10 holdings in our portfolio, you'll see companies exposed to a diverse range of sectors. And why they're right for this portfolio is because of the growth opportunity that they present. A couple of the top holdings, a couple of the key contributors to performance over the last year include names such as Brickability, Next15, perhaps names not too familiar to many of your listeners. Brickability is the UK's largest brick factor. It controls around 19% of UK brick supplies, but you've probably never heard of it. It sits between the importers and the manufacturers of bricks at one side, and then on the other side, you've got the merchants and the house builders. And it's managing that inventory, which it's been good at, and it can generate a teen margin from doing that, which is attractive. From our perspective, it's also it's expanding its product set into new parts of the market. It's recently done a significant deal as well, which again builds on its presence within bricks and in other markets. And if you look at the underlying fundamentals of this business, we'd expect to see earnings CAGR of about 30% for the next couple of years, which is great. This is really exciting, and its multiple still is we think very prudent mid-teens. So I don't think the market's fully buying into the opportunity set here. The yield's about 2%, but it is growing as well. It's finding those companies. In our marketing documents, we always put charts in of some of these stocks, and you can see the share price progression overlaid against the earnings progression. And it's ultimately, we want to see that nice fit. These companies are not being driven by a re-rating. As I say, Brickability on 12, 13 times calendar year 22's PE is not expensive. So it clearly hasn't benefited from that, but it obviously has to some degree. But it's ultimately been driven by that earnings growth coming through. So that's what gets us excited about that one. Next15, I've talked about that as well briefly. That's our largest position. It's been one of the largest contributors to performance as well. This is a marketing services business. I think the market was wrongly pigeonholing this as an advertising business, and it's not. It's much wider than that. It's a marketing services data business. It's got big relationships. Relationships with big US tech firms, your Facebooks, your Googles, etc. And it's been seeing fantastic earnings growth again. It had a relatively good COVID. It's got earnings CAGR of mid-teens through the crisis. It's got multiple from a calendar year 22 perspective of about 22 times. So again, not expensive. And again, if you look at it from the share price against the earnings growth, again, it's been the progression in the share price of being underpinned by this projected profit growth. Again, that's something we can't emphasize enough. This is not a re-rating story. This is a story driven by profitability and growth there. Yield, relatively modest, 1% right now, but growing nicely. The share price is up over 130% in the last year. So it's obviously doing something right. So those are really nice quality stocks. We're also buying some smaller ones, companies which the market hasn't quite bought into yet. We're trying to find companies at that inflection point. So names which could be at that inflection point for potential growth. You've got STV, the Scottish television business. It's got a new age management team who are developing or building on the great advertising terrestrial business that it has in Scotland. The Scots, I can say this obviously being one of them, but we do like to watch television. The eyeballs up there are higher than they would be for core ITV. But the STV business isn't just resting on its laurels from that perspective. It's developing a production business. It's developing a digital business. The market's not really, again, appreciating the opportunity set here. And I think we'll see the growth coming through in the next 2 to 3 years. And that, again, is a single-digit multiple. So the market isn't buying into that opportunity yet. But that's what gets us excited, finding these small companies before the rest of the market picks up on them. And then finally, DWF, it's a business services business, came to market in 2019. had a profit warning and an issue shortly after IPO. The share price derated. We got involved in it early on in 2021. It's had a re-rating to some degree. But again, what we're excited by here is the management team's focus on turning this business around and driving the profitability, reducing the time for cash collections and taking out cost within the business. So the earnings growth there, looking at about 20% on a CAGR basis to 2023. You've got a PE multiple of about 10 times and you got yield in excess of 6%. It's finding, again, these opportunities. The rest of the business services sector is trading on high teens multiples. So this business should grow. It should continue to outperform and it should re-rate from here. In the meantime, it's paying the fund a nice dividend. So these are sort of attractive examples we're finding within this small mid-cap space overlooked by more traditional income funds.
So Chris, I just want to look forward now to, you know, what you're going to be doing with the fund going forward. But before we do that, I think it would be good to have a look back since you launched 3 years ago. As we said at the beginning, number one fund in the sector. Now, throughout that period, there has been significant volatility in the markets. Of course, we had the coronavirus pandemics, and there's obviously been jitters around interest rate changes in the United States, and that's caused some volatilities over the last 3 years, amongst other things. I mean, how have you gone about dealing with that volatility in markets? And, you know, if we start to see volatility creep back into markets going forward, I mean, is this something that you would be, you know, keep doing the same of, or do you see the macro picture changing that it may actually alter some of the bottom-up selections that you're looking at?
Yeah, Jonathan, with looking back, I think it is key to answering the second point about where we go going forward. Looking back, extremely volatile 18 months. With regard to performance and positioning over the pandemic and since, that the more things changed, the more we stayed the same. We made very few asset allocation changes through the period. As I say, we're focused on these growing businesses, and we've been hugely reassured by how they've traded through this pandemic. They've dealt with, you mentioned economic growth might slow. It might slow. I think economic growth in UK next year is going to look quite attractive myself, but we'll see. But these companies have dealt with something far worse than a bit of slowing economic growth or further challenges around Brexit, whatever might be thrown at them. They've dealt with the pandemic, and they dealt with it pretty well. And the majority of them have come out in this in relatively good shape, in many cases stronger competitively than some of their peers, because they've had access to capital markets should they require it. And most of them haven't required it in our portfolio, but they've been able to come to market to raise capital to perhaps grow more quickly than they were planning on doing pre-crisis. So that, you know, we haven't made any significant changes, although we did take advantage last time, you know, during the crisis of some extreme market moves to add to some positions we believed had been oversold. Early in the pandemic, we did reduce some of our exposure to stocks related to consumer lending. We had some concerns over how that would fare in the face of a significant economic slowdown. And again, if you were to be right and we were to see that, that might be an area of the market we think about taking capital away from. But we reallocated that capital towards areas of the market where we felt trading would prove resilient, and where we had comfort that dividends would be paid. So we did invest in the supermarkets during the crisis, for example, which has been helpful, clearly, given what we've seen since then. In the earlier stages of the pandemic, we also saw some extreme price movements, which we took advantage of. One of the fund's growth satellites I touched on earlier was Future. This is a business which benefits from e-commerce volume, so clearly lockdown was going to be good for it. And had a series of upgrades to analyst consensus estimates since COVID, middle of last year. Just by way of contextualizing, this stock was £14 in February last year. It dropped to £6 in March, and it's currently trading in the 30s. It's those type of wild swings where the fund is able to be relatively nimble and take advantage of some of the volatility to add to positions which have been hugely oversold. But you know, as I say, this isn't just a case of short-term trading. We're very much focused on long-term growth. We're focused on businesses which we class as progressive, and which we're fully expecting will grow through the cycle ahead of the market. That's exactly what we've seen, and that's exactly what we'd expect to see if there was to be any further economic challenges. We've been hugely reassured by the resilience and the performance of the majority of the portfolio. I say hence why we haven't felt the need to change much over the last 18 months. I say as we've emerged from the pandemic, we see our portfolio holdings recovering extremely strongly. There's been a raft of upgrades, which has been, again, hugely reassuring, and that's something which we hope can continue for the medium term.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Chris, just to finish off here, what makes you tick? What makes you get up in the morning?
Jonathan, apart from my three-year-old daughter and my four-week-old son, who's not sleeping, they definitely will get me up in the morning. But in all seriousness, despite doing this for a relatively lengthy period of time, we as a team remain excited by the prospects of finding fantastic investments across UK small and mid-cap markets. The UK has a great entrepreneurial, growth-focused culture, and we continue to see excellent investment opportunities come to market, both currently listed and coming to market. It's the prospect of investing in these opportunities that continues to drive us and excite us and ultimately gets us up in the morning, and long may it continue.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So that was Chris McVeigh, the lead fund manager at Octopus Investments. Chris, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Jonathan.
So just as a note to listeners, if you're a subscriber to the UK Investor Magazine email newsletter, there will be some further information coming out on Octopus Investments and the funds in the coming weeks. So do keep an eye on that. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.